Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 122 of Dominaria's Judgment, a mostly weekly, mostly constructed magic podcast. I'm Dom Harvey, I'm here with Ari Lax, and this week we are back to witness the sky falling, depending on who you ask her.
Yeah, I mean, we have the preliminary title of this episode as Modern Players, Are You Doing Okay? Which I think that this follows the general advice of, if you read a question as the headline of an article, the answer is an immediate bold no, and... Well, I guess in this case, you probably want to keep listening, but the answer is definitely no.
Yeah, you definitely want to keep listening, regardless of your opinion on that question or not. But Modern has something for everyone, and right now it has something for everyone to complain about. So don't want to take that away from people. We do want to let people enjoy things, even if not enjoying things is what they appear to enjoy. But I do think there are several legitimate criticisms, problems, debates circling the Modern format at this point. So we're going to try and tackle some of those today. And normally we would get into our main topic here and then at the end check in on various formats just to see what the online results have been, some of the big paper tournaments, and see what's going on there. This week, the results are the headline. Those are the news story, and those will help to frame the debate going forward. So set up some of those recent Modern results for us here.
Yeah, so there's the 16 scam in the top 32 one. There's the one that has like 6 scam in the top 8. There's one that like might only have 3 scam, but that's doesn't really count because like the other decks are not really consistent in any way. Yeah, there's a lot of scam. There's just a lot of scam and not a lot of anything else really keeping up with the numbers. Like there's some four color, but there's, you know, in the same way you would say, oh, like this is a good week for Tron, and there's just like there's some Tron in the results, but like it's never like 20% Tron across the metagame. Like, you know, there's like a few four color decks in the top 8. There's a few Tron decks. There's a little bit of Amulet. Some people, I guess, still playing Yawgmoth, which makes my head scratch. Heart and Soul, or Heart and Scales, you know, doing its best, trying real hard, trying to put up those numbers, right? It has a good scam matchup, right?
Yeah, so four color or beans, depending on where you want to place your focus there, that is the deck that is doing its best to outmuscle scam in terms of dragging those complaints to itself. With mixed results, actually, and this is one of the weird meta-narratives over the past few weeks, is depending on which corner of Magic Twitter, Magic Reddit, and so on you check in on at any given time, you'll see either scam is hideously oppressive, I'm sick of scam, I won't play Modern again until Grief and Fury and maybe Feign Death and Not Dead After All are gone, just to be safe. And then you go back into the wardrobe and you end up in this completely different reality where beans, there's just the beans talk is everywhere, everyone's thinking about those beans, and four color once again is this dominant force in Modern, oppressing everything else. And there is a common thread there, and perhaps the same cycle of cards even, which is responsible for those decks being able to do their worst. But in theory, there is this weird balance those decks help each other to maintain, where going into the Pro Tour, one of the narratives was Scam is, if not the best deck, at least the most popular deck and the litmus test for any deck in Modern. And after the release of Lord of the Rings, it seemed like 4-color was going to be the deck to be. And by the time we got to the PT, it seemed like that was still going to be the case. And part of that was, if the room's going to be 15 to 20% scam, then if 4-color is the scam killer that it is alleged to be, well, it can feast on that. And the decks which in turn usually feast on 4-color, like the big mana decks and some of the fringe combo decks, scam is so good against them that you just can't justify playing those. And so scam is almost boosting up 4-color and helping it to maintain its top spot. In practice, what happened at the PT was 4-color just got beat up by those big mana decks, which were out in force and were actually doing okay for themselves against scam as well. And then scam still did very well, and there were some other winners like Rhinos and so on, but the big loser when all was said and done was 4-color. And maybe we are kind of back in that same hype or anti-hype cycle again, and we will have a section of this episode dedicated to those beans, but it would be remiss of us not to begin here with the big elephant in the room, the big talking point, which is of course scam. So if you ask most people, I think the idea of scam being a problem is fairly uncontroversial at this point, whether it's just its metagame representation, the play patterns involved, just how fun is it to play with or against, how sustainable those play patterns are, like how long are people going to put up with getting double griefed or double furied on turn one, and if someone dips their toe into modern at their LGS for the first time and this is just what happens to them all day, are they ever going to come back again? And then also just, is its actual win rate getting to the point where it's oppressive as well? So a lot of angles to look at that from. Where do you think is best to start that conversation?
I want to start with the fun to play with and against question. I think that Scam is actually like really fun to play. A lot of games are not. This idea that like turn one grief is so secure is really not true. There's a lot of games where you are like, okay, I'm going to turn one grief my opponent, and I need to be prepared for the possibility that like the game is not over and I have to keep playing. How am I able to close this game out from what I've done? Like, what are the cards I'm keeping in my hand? There's a lot of like interesting decisions and gameplay there, and a lot of scrappiness where like, if you watch a good Scam player play, like there's a lot of games where they like, I don't want to say exactsies their opponent, but like they use all of their resources to put their opponent to zero. And it's actually fairly interesting and a lot of good decisions because it's a lot of sort of predictiveness and like trying to like backwards sculpt like their hand versus your hand and also like what the top of their deck could be. I think the gameplay from the Scam side is actually really interesting. The gameplay on the other side of the board is always putrid when the Scam stuff happens, though.
Yeah, from the Scam side, it does remind me of some of the more low-resource but high-octane games that you get in the more ruthless formats, like Legacy, like Vintage, where just by definition, because the game is going to be pretty short, the game can't get that big, and also you are actively working to reduce the size of that game through things like Grief and Fury, and so you're not going to have a ton of decisions, and ideally this will be a relatively short game, but you still have decisions to make, and those are high impact. If you get any of those wrong, or you make this calculated risk, or you take the educated gamble and it doesn't pay out, like that really will have consequences, and those decisions are compressed into this quite narrow time frame. So even if the game itself in absolute terms, or just in like in game time, doesn't last for that long, there is still a lot of magic being played in that pretty narrow window. Doesn't feel like that from the other side, though, where like once you get grief scanned or fury scanned, the ball very much is in your court to do anything to fight your way out of it, and it's easy to not let yourself focus on, well, my opponent made a good call in keeping the second Orcish Bowmasters over the Dathi Voidwalker. Like, no, you're focused on how do I not die immediately to this bullshit thing that just happened to me. And sometimes that bullshit thing is the Dathi Voidwalker or the Blood Moon or all of the other things that make the Scam deck so successful, where you're going back to our primer on Scam at the very start of this year, back before it was this dominant force and was just one of the top tier decks in Modern, there was this whole philosophical debate over, is this a mid-range deck with a combo plan, or is this a more linear deck that can be a mid-range deck if it needs to be? And I came down on the latter side of that, and maybe the fact that with Bowmasters and some of these other tools, you can just flip between those roles more easily is part of why it's gone from like A tier deck to S tier deck. But I think that you have all these ways to effectively end the game with a single tactic, or to make the game all about that thing, and that just isn't great gameplay in general. Like, it doesn't inspire great feelings. Like ley lines are a classic example here, right? Like you put Leyline of the Void into play against a graveyard deck, the game is now about that card one way or another. And Scam can also do that with literal Leyline of the Void, and in the omnipresent Scam mirrors, like that is the go-to sideboard plan at this point. But you have Dathi Voidwalker and Blood Moon, these other hate cards, Ragavan, like if that's allowed to run away with the game, it has a tendency to do so, as everyone will know at this point. Like that is the thing about the deck. Like, it is free wins everywhere, and if you can fend off that first wave of free wins, then there can be an interesting game from the other side. But if the Scam deck does its thing, which it's very good at doing, then that will lead to a lot of games where you are reminded why fun is zero sum, to put it that way.
Yeah, you described it as like, oh yeah, there's these Delver games. It's like, well, half of the games are stacks and half the games are Delver, and that's not a lot of fun. But like, the other piece of the puzzle that's sort of missing is that often the Delver-style games, they don't have they're a lot more absolute because it's not like Delver and then, oh, I get to ponder and then we've got some back and forth. Like, the common thing that happens in Legacy is, like, the slower deck versus Delver is, like, there's some battle over Wasteland and whether the player gets on board, and then, like, maybe the first Delver dies and they're down some life, and then they're, like, exchanging ponders, trying to get to the point where they, like, it's like this actual protracted game with phases. With Scam, there's two phases. There's the, like, I am dying phase, the I am dying less fast phase, and then the, like, the Scam player doesn't have anything to do with their draw step unless they drew a Fable, and that is a card that's fast enough in the matchup, and the game just rapidly crumbles and ceases to be a thing. And that dynamic is, even if navigating the early part, I think is a bit more interesting with this deck, the resolutions are not that fun.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a tough sell that, yeah, just in gameplay terms, Scam can be miserable. Does that not apply in its same way, or in some way, excuse me, to basically any deck for its own reason? So, yeah, I don't know if playing against four color and getting buried under an avalanche of evoke elementals and silly card advantage engines and so on, like, that is like the polar opposite play experience, has some crossover in terms of the evoke elementals, but it's still not anything people really enjoy. And then there's almost a disproportionate amount of hate compared to how often it happens for my opponent had turn three natural Tron into some Khan, doesn't really matter which one, or I got turned by Amulet again. How often does this happen? The answer is not that often, but judging by the complaints about it, you think it happened every other game. And it feels like there is a type of player who wants to seek out that kind of deflection as a comfort blanket, which is not meant to invalidate the actual complaints behind it, but I think separating out the complaints that were always going to come and they're directed at Scam because that's the talk of the moment versus, no, even people who generally are going out of their way to play Modern or to defend Modern have taken a step back because they're just sick and tired of this. Like, I saw Sam Pardee on Twitter, who has been very successful in Modern over the years and a big proponent of the format, saying that, yeah, he used to play Modern Leagues for fun, and now he just doesn't do that because, yeah, he's been Scam before and he's seen that joke and he doesn't like it. So until something changes, like, he's not going to go back to that well again.
Well, I want to point out two things that have happened as a result of specifically Scam. One, I think that it is, this is like a Patrick Sullivan baseline test of your opponent, like, pulls the Scam against you. What cards are you supposed to put in your deck to answer that? And the answer is, like, very unclear because my opponents keep putting Stone of Garbage and Leyline of the Void in their decks, and then I just play Raghavan and they die. And, like, it's not interesting. Like, at least when it was Murktide last year, there was this very clear thing of, like, oh, they are going to try and counterspell my large creature. I should put Cavern Souls in my deck. And that is very effective when it lines up. I don't really know what's effective here. And then I guess the other piece is that I don't actually know if Scam is much better against, like, the random nonsense section of the metagame than Izzet was. But the thing that is very clear is that when you lost to Izzet with your random nonsense deck, it felt like you were scrapping in the game, and, like, maybe if you did better next game, you could pull that extra turn and a half ahead and actually get somewhere. Whereas with Scam, you're just like, oh, I'm not playing. Like, I'm dead. And I don't know how many times you can run into that wall the same way you could run into that wall with Izzet.
Yeah, and that goes back to the age-old question of there's always going to be a best deck, as people like to remind each other. Is it better if that best deck is something like Dredge, which, yeah, it, don't unban God Grave Troll again. Like, we don't need to risk that again. But if we get to that point, you know what the response is for the most part. Whereas there is this sense of helplessness where with Scam, you can have your cyborg plan for the matchup. You can have your tech, and it's just not in your hand anymore, and you don't even have a hand by the end of turn one. And it almost is reminiscent in a way of the Hollow One frustration sometimes, where now people are nostalgic for when that deck was a central pillar of Modern. But in real time, I remember the complaints about, look, I kept my seven, and then I got Burning Inquiried into a non-functional Mulligan, effectively, and then I die because I missed my second land drop. Like, that's that sense of there was nothing I could have done, even though there is randomness present at every stage of that process, where it's, you know, you put cards in your deck where you increase the odds of drawing them, and if you just, the first copy opens up new things that are possible in your deck. But, like, yeah, if you have a four of in your 60 card deck, you're what, 40% to draw that in your seven. That's like a kind of yes or no gate that you have to pass. And then there's what is the rest of my hand? Like, there's variance in just the cards I draw every turn. Like, there's that aspect present at every step of the game, but the act of I have to choose to keep a monarch in my hand, that is the first meaningful choice that it feels like you make in a game of Magic, and where that is effectively rendered irrelevant by a greedy scam on turn one, that creates this feel bad right from the outset, which is hard to like recover from psychologically. And then, yeah, the larger point of what am I meant to do about this, I think is even more damaging here, because people turn towards these cards which are high variance in the sense of, yeah, if you have a Leyline of the Void in your opener against scam, and their hand is reliant on scamming you on turn one, well, you did actually get them, right? Whereas, yeah, if you play a Leyline and then they just have turn one Ragavan, or turn two Voidwalker, or your deck is weak to Blood Moon and they just Blood Moon you or something, there are a lot of ways to where that card just won't matter, or even they play Fable on three and then just start hardcasting their Evoke Elementals. It's easy for even the things which can be good conditionally to just flounder around and do nothing. And that's even leaving aside the classic Leyline fail case of, yeah, I draw it as my draw step on my first turn instead of my opener, and now I'm just cursing whatever deity has forsaken me. So the things that people naturally turn to against scam tend to be these cards which have these obvious fail cases which the entire rest of their deck lines up well against, and also just inherently, yeah, it's good a lot of the time and bad the rest of the time, and so they're almost doubling down on the aspects of scam which they find frustrating and incorporating those into their response to scam, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of want to point this out, and I think this ties back to what you were saying about like four color was supposed to be the scam killer and it just failed. I don't know if it's functionally possible to be good against scam when you're on the draw, especially after sideboarding when they know what hands to keep. I don't think you can ever be favored in those games. I've yet to see what does that. I would be willing to believe that like something with subtlety is probably the reasonable way you get around that, but it's tough.
Yeah, and I think people want there to be cards or effects that you can turn to as a response to any one thing. Whereas against scam, what I tell people in the context of Amulet, but also more generally, is you can't be overly reliant on any one thing or any one way to like cheese them back because of that dynamic that I just mentioned. And so more so than I'm going to board in this card and this is my plan against scam, you care more about the density or distribution of the relevant cards in your deck, so that once they shrink the game to the point where no one really has anything going on, you have a certain like baseline level of resources and enough good things you can draw that you have good odds of emerging triumphant in that top deck war. But there's that point is much harder to convey to people and for people to accept. And also, when you're doing that, you still feel at the mercy of, well, I've done that, I understood the assignment, but now it still comes down to, do I draw one of the 14 outs that I put in my deck instead of 10? Like, there is still the variance is overt in a way that it might not be in most other contexts.
Yeah, you really need to be playing these games where your opening hand has multiple answers to stuff to play against their fair hands, and then the rest of your deck has 8,000 other things to draw to, and like also you have to be able to kill their turn one thing if it's like there's just like a lot of ways for everything to line up really bad, and you have to build your deck with a lot of specific ways to deal with that. And it feels like, I guess I want to bring up this question of, was it just Bowmasters that changed this and made it this extreme, or was there something else that changed in the broad meta? Like, is it the rest of the metagame crumbling in some way and being unable to create decks that deal with scam, or is it just Bowmasters? It was like one more good card.
Yeah, that's the big question for me, because scam has been at least very good for over a year at this point, but at some point it went from this is a good deck to this is the really good deck to this is the only deck, almost, if you look at these results. And it's hard to pinpoint exactly what led to that level up. So Lord of the Rings and Bowmasters is the natural answer to that. I think generally what that set did to the format is that it forced the decks that were kind of coasting until then to actually justify their presence there. So the decks like Murktide and Creativity, which, yeah, cards like Bowmasters and Ring are good against them, but there was also this kind of inertia in the format where these decks had weaknesses or aspects in which they were clunky or inefficient, where once those were actually being targeted and exploited, they couldn't really stand the test of time, and Scam passed that test in a way that a lot of the tier one-ish decks did not. So that sinking tide left Scam on top. And then the thing I really wonder about, given that not too much has changed since the Pro Tour, is when did Scam go from, yeah, this deck is the most popular deck there and a successful deck, to now this is the only deck and we've got to hit something or the sky might actually be falling? And that's the question I still wrestle with.
Yeah, so I actually would like to point to, well, we'll get into this, but I would like to point to the printing of the One Ring and the printing of Up the Beanstalk. I think that there was two important decks in this equation, sort of three, but three. That really have fallen out, because the problem is that you're no longer legally allowed to play the game on turn six or seven against a huge percentage of the non-scam part of the format. Like, you just cannot go that long in any kind of like tit for tat battle against the four color decks, the Tron decks, the mono black decks, just because they will have 47 cards in their hand. And those three decks that have really fallen off as a result of this are Creativity, Murktide, and Rhinos. And those are the three decks that put up reasonable results against Scam, to the point where, like, I think that the thing with this is that those three decks are good against Scam and pull the deck in different directions. Actually, you could probably argue a fourth in there, which is Hammer. Like, the decks that are struggling the most against everything else, like, what, I mean, Hammer's reasonable against the big mana decks, but, like, because so much of the rest of the problem set has collapsed, they can just focus on Hammer in ways that are like, oh, I don't need to beat Living End because of Dothi Voidwalker. Like, they just put, like, engineered explosives and mop up the Rhino players and the Hammer players and stuff like that. I think that that is really the core issue, is that things became so much harder for the decks that are, like, a more diverse spread of decks that are 50% versus Scam or 53% versus Scam or whatever on a given week, that it's just so absurd. And, like, Scam just naturally has the, like, well, I get X percentage against the four-color Beans deck for free. I don't really play their game plan. Like, when you play Scam against Beans, what happens usually is that your opponent goes to zero life before they, like, get somewhere. Like, it's not like, oh, they ran out of answers. It's like, no, like, you actually dealt 20 damage to them, and they're left, like, I needed a turn and a half to get out of this. And you're like, well, you know, I had X number of threats in the right time span. And I think that it's just, like, this really bad confluence of, like, nothing that beats Scam can do well, and Scam is naturally positioned against the things that are beating those decks in a way that just upsets what all of your expectations of the situation are.
Yeah, the thing that makes it kind of puzzling is that it feels like the other decks tend to level up more than Scam and have more room to do that. So the One Ring, phenomenal card against Scam. Bowmaster's a great card in Scam, but it seems like that should favor the One Ring on balance, although maybe results since then suggest otherwise. But just looking at other trends and other new cards that have come out, so Preordain getting unbanned should be a big shot in the arm to Murktide, Fair Breach, any kind of Izzet deck, and also maybe some of the combo decks. And then you look at Wilds of Eldraine, Lost Caverns of Ixalan. Yeah, we can debate how many copies of Molten Collapse do you want to play or something, but by and large, everything else in the format stands to gain more from new printings than Scam does, where most of its slots are fairly spoken for. And strategically, it's actually not that flexible in the sense of a lot of these other decks you can reimagine from the ground up, right? So we saw this at the PT with Tron, where Handshake Tron, very different in both approach and also results from your average monogreen Tron deck. Even a deck like Amulet, using a bunch of these weirdo cards, within that, there's still a lot of flexibility in terms of how you fill it out. And then same thing goes for the four-color decks, the fair decks. It feels like Scam is almost weirdly bereft of options, and it's pretty clear what its best options are for any given role. And so I don't know how much room there is to really reimagine Scam or to improve Scam. And people are trying. I have some quite deranged Scam lists in the pipeline. So check out my article this week, actually, if Scam Vine is a word that tickles your fancy. But I think that Scam is mostly a known quantity at this point. So if you ask, how does SCAM improve its four-color matchup, if that's all you care about, I'm not sure what the answer is, but I do know that most of those answers are just, they're there. I don't think there's like any diamond in the rough waiting to be discovered. So maybe that is one answer. Maybe SCAM has like reached its final form and everything else has some kind of suboptimal choices baked into it somewhere. But I suspect the story is more than that.
Yeah, I mean, we did get, I don't know, how much do you think the like Fable versus Pyromancer swap has improved the deck? It doesn't feel like a ton, but it's nice. I mean, almost as much of that improvement comes from the fact that, like, you can Fable into a Bowmasters and not die.
Well, yeah, that is an improvement, but actually one very recent trend is, I think Tristan was pushing this move, is that when you're not playing against Bowmasters, Season of Pyromancer is still a really good card. So just having some of those in your sideboard as your pivot for maybe the four-color matchups against the Izzet decks and other kind of slower matchups is probably a good place to be again. Like, you can't count that one out and say, well, Fable has officially obsoleted Season of Pyromancer. It's still a good card with a good role to play in the archetype. But yeah, I mean, more broadly, SCAM just is SCAM, and there's not anything you really need to fix. It's clearly very good at its job, but I don't think if there was a modern PT again in 2 months, SCAM would still be everywhere, but it would be the kind of SCAM list that you see currently, and it wouldn't be some list that is like 8 cards different in a way that really transforms its matchup profile.
Yeah, I mean, you would just see zero Mount Dunes, and then that would be it.
I guess there's the Seth Manfield approach of like zero Ragavan and playing some Sun and Bloods and so
no,
on.
No, please.
Okay. Well, can I interest you in Flame Queen Harbinger and Carrion Feeder? No. Okay. Moving swiftly on.
Carrion Feeder.
Okay, it's really good with Vengevine and Citrus Supply, and then when you evoke an elemental, you get this free counter on your... whatever, fine.
No, it's fine. You skipped the part where there was Vengevine in your deck, which is one good card getting added for every 4 bad cards.
But it's not 4 Vengevines, Ari. It's 8 Vengevines, because I had Flamekin Harbinger and Citrus Supplier and some Dredge cards. Whatever. People can go and check this out on their own time.
This doesn't work. I was like, you put the Vengevine on top, and then you play the Citrus Supplier and mill it, and then you've already played your second creature. It's fine. Continue.
Well, so that one doesn't work, but you can. For example, turn 1, Flaming Harbinger for Vengevine. Turn 2, Souls of the Lost, discarding my Vengevine, evoke my Fury, get back my Vengevine. That's a pretty decent start. Not necessarily better than the median start in the stock SCAM deck, but it's exciting. It's new. It's cool and shiny.
Yeah, I mean, Souls of the Lost is a wonderful card that I guess is worth testing in some things.
Yeah. See, this version is going to have some Dalthy Voidwalker and or Leyline of the Void issues, which may be an issue in the pseudo mirror. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. It'll be fine.
Yeah. So it's not clear. Like, it feels like the problem is the rest of the metagame and not SCAM, but I don't know how much you can even if you said, okay, the One Ring and Beanstalk never happened, just like pretend and carry on, I don't think you could unwind the clock. And I think that the, like, Fury Grief starts are, like, if SCAM was taking up the, like, 50% of the Ragavan share that it probably should have been for a fairly long time, I still don't think people would be very happy with that world. I think that the Grief lines are just not what people want to play against, and I respect that. That's a totally, like, Tybalt's Trickery is on the modern ban list, and, like, it's in the same ballpark.
The funny thing to me is that no one ever publicly confesses to having a bad SCAM matchup, and yet SCAM is throttling all of these tournaments and doing very well. So it has to be beating someone, this silent majority out there who's just taking their losses to SCAM with a good grace and maybe not ever coming back to play Modern again. But anyone who you see engaging in Modern discourse says, oh yeah, my deck's fine against SCAM. My deck is actually good against SCAM. My deck is a SCAM killer. And most of those people have to be wrong in order for this reality that we live in to make any sense, but no one thinks that they're that person. No one's going to admit to being wrong like that. And I almost, if someone's introducing a new deck to me, I would almost have more respect and more interest in the deck if they say up front, yeah, it's behind against SCAM, this is my plan, it doesn't salvage the matchup, but this is what I think is your only hope, but these are the reasons why you're meant to consider it as well. But people don't do that in practice. It's, yeah, I beat SCAM and I beat everything else. I broke the format. #no bad matchups.
Yeah, that's not how that works. I guess let's just get to the gist of it. Is do you like? I wasn't sold that grief needed to be banned until I started like playing a bunch of Scam again after like. I spent a lot of months losing with things that weren't Scam and Modern, and then I started playing Scam for a while and didn't lose. And after playing enough with Grief, I think I'm kind of... I enjoy playing with Scam. I enjoy winning with Scam. I also don't think the Grief aspect of the deck needs to be part of a successful format. Like, I think that Grief, from the beginning, has violated the terms of what a free card is supposed to be allowed to do, which is, like, anytime you have a free card that is... potentially proactive, it leads to a lot of problems. This is the like Rewind versus Cloud of Fairies issue where like Rewind is totally fine because it's conditioned on your opponent having things, but like anytime you put the free effect tied to like anything remotely proactive, you just set yourself for a lot of potential problems. And from that elemental cycle, Grief is the only one that does that. Really, from the elementals and force cycle, I guess. Technically, you could count Force of Virtue as a proactive card, but I don't know. We'll hard pass on that until we start seeing Squadron Hawk in every top eight.
And then people can clamor for Force of Virtue to be banned as well. And how do they keep printing these free cards? Don't they ever learn? But as someone who has won a lot of money and glory over the years casting Thoughtseize, to what extent is the Grief experience from the Grief caster side different and... maybe more or less healthy for a format as a whole than just the usual Thoughtseize play patterns are, which are baked into what Modern is over a decade at this point.
I think that there's just no reliable... like, in order for your deck to get double griefed on turn one and basically, like, you can get Thoughtseized on turn one and you just have, like, two of the good card and your opponent's like, well, I gotta do something about that. That I've just never seen that happen with Grief. It's just not possible, barring, like, the... or, let's rephrase. The odds of it happening are always going to be so small unless your deck is so linear that it's exploitable in another way. You just can't have hands that survive double Thoughtseize turn one. It's just not a functional piece of seven-card hands.
Yeah, and the decks which are redundant enough to do that are often the ones that care about card quantity as well. So, is Burn good against Grief Scam? Well... yes, in the sense of all my cards do the same thing, but it's not anyway because I need enough of those cards that all do the same thing to actually accomplish my goal in the game. And so finding a deck which is both redundant and also low resource of enough to operate under that constraint, I don't think that intersection actually exists.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, maybe like exactly Rhinos. That's it.
I mean, so... even though Rhinos has actually done okay as the scam killer, I think there are big structural issues there where, like, I would always feel happy on the scam side in that matchup just because, yeah, their deck is so much worse when they don't have a cascade spell, and I have a lot of ways to strand the... or take the one cascade spell from their hand, or... I don't know. I'm not a believer in Rhinos, and I'm not a believer that somehow, despite having those glaring flaws, that Rhinos is a good response to scam, despite what... occasional results may suggest, but yeah, I think the broad point remains of that nothing really exists in that intersection, and if it did, that in itself probably would be a problem, because what are you meant to do about that?
Yeah, and like I said, it, you know, we talk about Rhinos, it's not hard for the scam player just to have Chalice in the board. Like, I have lost to Beans players who sided into Rhinos because you can't board in Chalice without, like, wondering, am I boarding in the card against the wrong half of their deck? But, like, if your opponent's just on Rhinos from game one, like, you know, you just have to have three cards in your deck and you're fine.
I actually think Douthi Voidwalker is a piece of this puzzle too, because if you look at historically, what decks have been good against these hyper disruptive strategies, Dredge specifically, or these Dredge adjacent decks come to mind where, yeah, fine. Like, I expect to be discarding cards manually anyway, and then it's kind of hard to pick an exact hole in what I'm doing, and given enough time, I will just tear through my deck in a way that just ignores the resource system of the game. And it turns out that you can't do that against main deck Douthi Voidwalker, and then often sideboard Leyline of the Void or Unlicensed Hearth as well. Like, you, there's just this main deckable way to hedge against one of the most proven historically responses to that strategy.
Yeah, I think the only option is that, like, you have to accept that this is a piece of the format moving forward, even if you push things in a direction that are that makes decks more resilient to it, where, like, at the end of the day, you've just created a mid-range deck that sometimes cycles around to being 45% versus the other mid-range decks, and therefore sort of disappears for a week, but then, like, comes back. Like, if, again, this is the if scam is your Murktide equivalent, like, is that good for the format? Or you accept that something has to be done, which, by the way, is not a rotting evoke. Oh my god, people.
Well, what well, is... we will get to that, don't you worry. But going back to the grief of it all quickly. So, is it grief that is the offender there? Given that, looking across Modern more broadly, I think grief in Living End is actually pretty obnoxious, although you could argue the whole, like, Cascade gimmick is the central problem there too. But more broadly, there are a lot of black decks in Modern which have limited or zero interest in grief, just with the demands that that card places on you and the type of game it encourages you to play. And I thought when grief was spoiled, it would fit in more of those decks than it had. So I thought it would be great in Yawgmoth, for example, because sometimes it can do the weirdo, like, free card that also is Lotus Petal for Call of Calling and sacrifices to Yawgmoth, and then sometimes you Eldritch Evolution into this, and it's good in that role, and so on and so forth down the line. But I don't think I've seen a single Yawgmoth list with a single grief in all the time since then. And just more broadly too, like the more normal mid-range black decks, you know, your Jund Sagas and so on, by and large, they don't have any interest in grief. So is it grief that is the issue there, or is it the conditions that allow grief to be good in a deck like that?
I think that this is a case of, like, trying to argue that you should ban Vendrine instead of Survival of the Fittest, to use a really old one. Like, the idea is that, like, grief breaks these, like, the legacy grief decks don't even play scam effects. They're just reanimating. Like, that's, they just have the card reanimate in their deck. And there's just, like, this very broad set of cards that, I guess, so I do want to talk about, like, why grief took so long to latch on, which is in part because it took people a while to figure out that the scam effects were what you want, which is related to the fact that people were initially trying to persist and ephemerate with grief. But, like, if you actually do the math, what happens when you scam a grief is that your opponent dies in 5 hits after you take 2 cards. Whereas if you ephemerate a grief, maybe you take 3 cards over 2 turns, but then your opponent dies in, like, 6 or 7 hits after that. And realistically, like, just putting the counter on and getting the extra attack is the equivalent of, like, himming your opponent off the top of their deck of cards that they didn't draw, or better. That extra power boost is really huge. So maybe the effects aren't quite in Modern that make it really that good, but, like, I don't really think that, like, I don't know, setting a permanent cap on the power level of these effects at, like, supernatural stamina is kind of, like, that's not really a solution that anyone really wants. I don't think that that's a great thing to have as a permanent cap just to support, again, a proactive free spell existing in your format.
Yeah, I think that if you you let grief stay, but you ban some other core component of scam, at some point in the future, we will be having a similar conversation around grief, I expect. And maybe it takes some busted Orzhov card being printed to where you can do the, like, black-white scam where these cards bridge the gap between grief and solitude, and by solitude getting ephemerated, like, that's not a pleasant experience from the other side either. So it seems like it will be this persistent troublemaker, not with actual persist, but with something else. But that is at least a somewhat unique angle where just Thoughtseize has not aged all that well in Modern, and grief is a unique thing in that space, which is incredibly pushed and probably too pushed, but it is at least distinct. Whereas I think Fury is a thing that people latch onto from the other side, where you probably have to hit one of them, and if you got to hit one, then Fury is the one which more overtly pushes out just vast swathes of cards, and also is a wider issue in the sense of, like, most red decks, unless there is some explicit thing forbidding it, do want to have Fury in some capacity. Whereas the thing I mentioned with grief of, yeah, there are lots of heavy black decks that just don't care about grief. I don't think you can say the same thing about Fury anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you could... Fury's a pretty messed up removal spell. Like, Pyrokinesis existing in Modern is pretty crazy. I don't think you have the same level of, like, I, if if you die to a turn one scam fury, I think that's kind of on you. It's like, I don't, this was the post from Jesse a long time ago, right? This was the, what do you do here? Like, what do you pitch to Fury to scam it on turn one? And everyone was just like, play Raghavan. That's what you do. Like, I don't functionally think that turn one Fury not dying is that much different than a lot of the other things that just exist in the format. It's just a large creature with double strike that needs to be killed by removal. And you need to have a specific subset of removal, but that's nice. Like, it's nice that it's not like every one mana kill spell is the same in the face of a Raghavan. And then, like, is sort of the same going late. It's like, oh, I need a specific thing that kills a 4/4 red creature in a time frame. Like, that's a fine constraint to have on the format.
But to again, so I think to draw that comparison with grief again, I think the grief by itself is relatively harmless. Grief scam is maybe the most offensive aspect of the scam deck. Whereas with Fury, I agree almost that Fury scam is not the worst litmus test to have, and if you go for it, you are accepting that you will just get punished doing that a lot of the time and really open yourselves out to a blowout. But just the first Fury, whether it's hard casting it for five or just casting it for free, that is what leads to a lot of the feel bads there. In whichever context Fury is being cast, whether it's in Scam or Four Color or Rhinos or whatever other red deck has enough red cards and they're doing that in part so that they can cast Fury, it violates the promise of free spells traditionally. Like, you could make some persnickety point about like Pyrokinesis or Contagion or something, but by and large, if you're going to do a free spell and a free interactive spell, it should not trade up on cards, given that you're already trading massively up on mana. And so Solitude is incredibly good and constrains the format, but you are at least trading two cards of one card. Same thing with Grief. With Fury, you can easily trade two cards for three or more cards for free, which is, it kind of violates the implicit contract being made there, I think.
Yes, but I don't think that that is a Fury exclusive problem. So, like, let's loop back to another one of our favorite cards, Plague Engineer. I think that the statement has kind of been made that controlling multiple cheap creatures in Modern is being designed around and viewed in the same vein as any other limit, like any other linear deck. Like, the idea, like basically, if you look at designs, I think that Champion of the Parish and Colossus Hammer are kind of viewed on the same tier of, like, what is your deck trying to do in relationship to the Modern metagame as a whole. And that is why you have the, like, Force of Vigor and Fury are operating in a very similar sphere there. Fury just is slightly more subsidized by your ability to cast it as a creature in mid-range games, which I think is, like, generally interesting. But, like, when you... I don't know. This whole thing... I think that there's a lot of other Modern designs that push Magic in the format into a point where you just don't get into board states where Fury is a 2-for-1 that often. And if you are playing a matchup against Fury and that is something that could come up, you should just think about that and just not have it happen to you. And I don't think that removing Fury from the format, like, okay, so we're going to, this is the problem everyone brings up. It's like, okay, we remove Fury from the format, we're going to play our deck. It's like, okay, so you have 2/2/2s. Well, you're not legally allowed to attack into Bowmaster. You want to remove that from the format. And, like, you go down the list of every single one toughness creature punisher, and then you just get to the point where it's like, my deck can't beat Lightning Bolt and Unholy Heat, so what am I even accomplishing here? I don't think that the problems of Fury as a pitch spell are unique to Fury as a pitch spell. I think that the Modern metagame has just moved in a direction where creatures of that category have to be viewed as disposable.
I do agree, although it is kind of terrifying to think about. We are having this discussion about should Fury be banned when Fury is only allowed to be like 40% of its maximum capacity, because the stuff that it should be gunning down left and right just isn't allowed to exist for so many other reasons already. Like, you wonder what the reaction would be if Fury was dropped into Modern circa like 2017 or something and just watching the carnage unfold.
Oh my gosh, I can imagine. Actually, that might be a fine error. You wouldn't have Force of Vigor, so, like, you'd just be like, okay, so you're gonna Fury my Scrap Trawler, are you sure you want to do that?
Some would argue that KCI was also a problem in its own right. They're wrong, of course. KCI is valid and perfect and should be legal in modern again and wouldn't even be good, which is very sad. And maybe there's something of the Splinter Twin of it all there, where it's like, okay, you think you want this card unbanned, but when we unban it and it's still unplayable, that's not what you... Like, you don't want this card unbanned. You want it unbanned and to be as good as it was when you were playing it last time, and that era has come and gone, I'm afraid. So maybe it's best for your sake if we just don't let you do this again. And maybe that's what people should be telling me and Canister and the rest of us about KCI.
I don't know. If Taylor Swift can keep re-releasing the same albums, we can keep re-releasing Eras of Modern.
I mean, we are re-releasing these same cards over and over again in progressively more like Uncanny Valley form. So, no, nothing is off the table there. Let's get into this bizarre suggestion, which has taken over Twitter in the past day or so, about erratering the entire Evoke mechanic. You know, Moldrifter and friends are going to die for the sins of for Grief and Fury here, it sounds like.
This is such a dumb idea. If you can name another Evoke card that is a problem, you win. Like, I don't know. Like, it's... Name a non-free Evoke card that's a problem. It's not like Companion, where it's like, name a companion that's a problem, and you name 9 out of the 10, and you're like, Umori, you're cool, you can stay. Like, there are literally, like, 50 other Evoke creatures that have existed forever, and, like, momentary blinking those creatures is actually cool. And anything you do that gets rid of that is, like, you being the problem. Actually, I forgot to double check this. Yes, okay. I forgot if Momentary Blink was literally stock from the start of the Evoke era, which I guess, not technically, because the initial Evoke decks were makeshift mannequining, but like, as soon as they printed Revelark, Momentary Blink ended up in the deck and then stayed in as a couple copies, and you had a Moldrifter scam sub theme going on in Standard as just a normal thing happening.
Yeah, and when people were ephemerating their Moldrifters in Modern, that was cool as hell. I want more of that. I want to go back to those times. And the idea that that is going to be just like strangled because of unwillingness to just grasp the nettle and ban Grief and Fury, just get those cards out of there if that's what you want to accomplish. And I've seen some comparisons to the Cascade mechanic being errated to nix the Valky interaction, which to me, that is just off base for a number of reasons. Firstly, Cascade itself is the problem there, right? Not Evoke. Like, Cascade is inherently problematic and situationally problematic in a way that Evoke could never really hope to be. And then the Valky example, that was actually, like, we debate whether Scam is really this broken or if it's just a weird artifact of Magic Online results, and we'll come back to that topic. Valky legitimately was that broken. Valky was the best deck in the history of Modern, both for its time and just in aggregate. And God only knows if that had been allowed to exist for another 4 or 5 months, and you get to play Shawless Adrin and Subtlety and Fury in your Valky deck, and, you know, they're going for their Valky on turn 3, and you Subtlety it back, and then you Cascade into your own Valky and plus it, and now you've hit their Valky, and it just, whatever. I want to live in that world, but I also want to be able to opt out of that world. But that interaction where you Cascade your 3-drop into your 2-drop and surprise, it's actually a 7-drop, that just doesn't pass the bullshit test inherently, where, like, okay, but this costs 7, so why can you cast it? Well, actually, if you look at how transforming DFCs or modal DFCs work differently in the rules, then you'll find that this will come under the purview of Cascade, but then you get to cast it however you want. That feels like bullshit, and it sounds like bullshit, and it is. And that change was bringing the rules in line with the basic intuition that everyone had about how the card should work. With this, it's, no, we know what Evoke does. We've known what it does for the past 15 years. It's been totally inoffensive up until this point. And so why are we massacring this entire mechanic instead of just hitting the cards with that mechanic that are actually the offenders here, instead of having to, you know, make the text on my Law and Moldrifters fundamentally misleading now?
Yeah, I want to bring up the point that, like, this comes down to, like, if you look at the cards that they have printed that are MDFCs since Valky, like, there is a lot of room to be mined in the space of, like, it is a cheap MDFC on the front and an expensive one on the back, and, like, changing the mechanic actually allows you to continue to print fun and interesting cards. Whereas changing the Evoke mechanic is just like, they're going to print another 5 Evoke incarnations and they're all going to be free and everyone's going to hate it. It's like, you're not obligated to do that. Like, you can just pretend that you're not allowed to print free spells again and move on with your life. And there have been, you know, X number of free spells printed into Modern ever, and you just don't have to do that. Like, it's fine.
I mean, if anything, I would rather see a more sweeping rules change to extend the Valky update more broadly. So, I like casting Bring to Light. I like casting Bring to Light for Valky. It is still bullshit that I get to do that, and that it works under the rules. Don't get me started on this whole Bring to Light for Deadly Vanity thing in Pioneer. Like, that's some horseshit in every direction. But I would, in an era of DFCs just being fundamentally confusing, I would be totally down for this wholesale rule where the card just is what you think it is, and you can't, like, fudge the numbers and cheat out something which wasn't designed to be cheated out that way. I would rather go further in that direction than try and pretend like you're applying the same principle to a case where it really doesn't apply at all.
Yep, I 100% agree there, and honestly, I'm kind of over casting Bring to Light for Valky on a power level, like, thing, and I just would rather not be trapped into doing it anymore, so if you told me I couldn't, that'd be fine.
Yeah, if you're casting Bring to Light, it should be for more colors. Like, the fact that you get to just cast 3 GU for your Tibble. If you had to do the full rainbow, fair enough, maybe. If it's some, like, Invasion of Alara style thing. When in practice, it is, like, your two-color, mostly two-color Rona deck or something is casting Bring to Light for 2 and getting Tibble. Like, that also rustles my jimmies in another way. And if you're casting Bring to Light for the 4/5, you can get Niv-Mizzet Reborn. You can get Sunfall, Escape to the Wild, just whatever. Fill in the blanks however you like. But that will be okay. Your Bring to Lights will be fine without this just weird anomaly staring you in the face from its, like, creature column in the decklist slot.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even think Tibalt is better than a lot of the cards accessible. So much of the value the first time around was that you hit it before anyone could attack it. And on 5, like, you just have to be ahead in such a tangible way, and then, like, also not get Dreadbore 2.0'd, and yeah.
So, coming back to the main topic here, what does actually beat Scan, if anything, in your view?
Okay, next question.
So, to put it more specifically, you're playing a tournament where the only thing you care about is beating Scan. And actually, there's an interesting case study here from the Modern Super League, where at one stage of the bracket, now that they're in the top 8, you know your opponent and get to update your deck at each stage of that. And so let's say you're against a known Scam main, a Scam sympathizer, you're 90+%, they're going to register Scam. What do you register? Is it Scam preparing for the mirror? Which, again, I'm not sure how you even do that better than them at this point, but are you just trying to lock in your 50% equity there?
Yeah, I mean, I would think I would be fine in a Scam mirror. I don't know about other people. If you can't play the Scam mirror, go back in time and spend time testing Scam. I don't really know. That's kind of my current spot on the format. Just I know I'm going to play Scam well. I'm just going to keep playing it until someone tells me to stop.
I think there are trends in the Scam decks that you can exploit. So, you're going to the PT, this is something I was not conscious of, but almost hoping for and coping for as well, was a real decrease in main deck Blood Moons, where if every Scam deck has 2+ main deck Blood Moons, then that's pretty scary for the big mana decks of the world. If it's maybe a copy in the main deck, if that, and then 2 in the sideboard, that's a much rosier picture for the Amulets and Trons and Coffers and so on of the world. And that family of decks, I think, given the current Scam list, can be built in such a way to target those. Like, and you saw this with the Handshake Tron list versus normal Mono Green Tron. Like, I think you can do that with a decent amount of success, but then you have to deal with the rest of the format over here, whether it's the four color decks or the Cascade decks, and then those decks all exist in this weird morass together where how does anti-Scam Coffers line up against anti-Scam Tron? I don't know, in the end. That pillar of the format, I think, has some room to grow there. And then the Scam killer of the hour is Hardened Scales, which I think it is good against Scam for the most part, but I think it's a little overstated, and especially if they are loading up on the right hate card. So they have more ley lines and they have the good anti-artifact stuff, then I think it's still at least close. I don't think it's a blowout by any means.
Yeah, I was going to say that also, like, if you are going into, well, I have to go head, like, I think that the, like, this exact head-to-head scenario reveals, like, a fairly big issue, which is that, like, when you're talking about, oh, I'm going to exploit, like, their slight lack of blood moons, like, on this day, I think that there's a lot of space for the scam deck just to kind of, like, lose 5% to the Tron decks game one and just, like, load up on the moons postboard and, like, start their Kolaghan's Command and, like, just do little things like that where, like, I think that the, like, as the metagame condenses and, like, if you start saying, oh, I need to beat scam, it actually becomes harder and harder to, like, hard target scam because they just stop having to worry about stuff that they know is, like, I don't know, like, you probably go 50-50 against Tron with two moons in your board, zero main. So, like, no one's going to show up with Tron just to beat scam. So you just don't have to worry about it. And you just, like, hard target scales that day and it's over. Like, I think that this scenario, as it, like, as you try to solve the problem, the numbers for scam just keep going up instead of going in any other direction.
Yeah, I think if there was a deck that could seriously boast to be 65% against scam, let's say, that might justify having some pretty bad matchups elsewhere. But given that, I think realistically the best you can do is maybe 55%-ish, if that, let's say you can lock that in. How bad can some of your other matchups against, like, Four Color or Murktide or whatever, how bad can those get before the whole thing just becomes not worth the effort? And playing a deck which is 50-50, if that, like, on your best day against scam, but actually is better against everything else, like, that's almost always going to be the better choice still.
Yeah, if I could get to 60% against scam and I was legit 0% against Four Color and I could push against the big mana decks, that deck would be on my list to play for a small field tournament. I just am not convinced that deck exists.
Let's get into that heads up then. How do you think the four color decks, and take your pick of whichever one you think is best across the board and best against scam, how do those actually line up in the matchup here?
I don't think they're good. I think that the problem is that you're pushed in two directions, right? So there's the direction where you try to become this, like, weird beans engine deck, and then you just die because your scam opponent kills you because you just, like, are a beans engine deck that doesn't actually combat them. And, like, there's a lot more games where they just go, like, turn one grief, take your two spells that matter and you don't have enough to draw back to. Or, like, turn one grief, take your beans, take your fury, and, like, you're throwing a pitch solitude at it and you have no cards left and their hand remaining is just, like, Bowmaster Fable and you die. I don't think that's good. Or you move in the other direction and you're just like, okay, I've got the One Ring, and if you beat the One Ring, then my entire deck is worse at 2-for-1-ing than you, and I die. And the scam deck just has, like, 6 ways to auto-beat the One Ring, plus the rest of their deck. So, like, I just would rather be on the scam side every single time. Also, that's not even including the, like, whatever percent where you just cast Blood Moon and your opponent dies.
Yeah, which, for as much as the four-color decks now are a little more resilient against Blood Moon, there's only so resilient you can be, and yeah, that card is still going to be lights out a lot of the time, and just the threat of it really warps how you have to play, where, yeah, you can fetch around Blood Moon in a technical sense, but is that going to leave you able to cast your spells going long? Like, there is some tension in practice between having basics to cast my Leyline Binding or something, and actually being able to cast Omnath without losing the 4 life that I want to gain back in the process, or being able to cast it at all. So there are real choices there, and yeah, you can still just get punked out by a Blood Moon effect, and that's been the case for as long as the Blood Moon effects have existed. I assumed 4 color would be solidly ahead there, but from watching stuff like the CCR versus Jarvis, like, on-stream exhibition match testing that, which is a great form of content, I think, for you know, people looking to really prepare for Modern. I wish there was more stuff like that out there. It just felt very close in a way that I don't know how Scam is meant to improve its choices there beyond just more moons, maybe. But I also don't know what Four Color is meant to do. Again, if you really care about this, like, if you, I don't know, your Cascade Beans deck, are you meant to, like, have a bunch of Sanctifier and Vex in your sideboard? Oriarch Champions I've seen as well. Do you load up on the draw effects or more one-for-one removal? Or, like, I don't know what weakness you're looking to show up in the matchup other than just a little bit more of all of the same stuff and just hoping that gets you there.
Yeah, I mean, from the scam side, I can tell you two things you shouldn't be doing. You shouldn't be putting Kroxa in your deck. You shouldn't be putting Kolaghan's Command in your deck. But everything else, whatever.
Yeah, even some of the old anti-4-color cards like Turak, they all just seem very mopey. Like, Shieldred actually has seemed okay to me. That one's more of just an across-the-board kind of thing for, you know, Rhinos and the Mirror and whatever. But I guess if you have them, they're going to be fine. I know some Cascade Beans decks have turned to Inevitable Betrayal, which looks like it's for, you know, Titan, Tron, Creativity, whatever, but is, like, weirdly effective sometimes against Scam 2. Just paying 3 mana for a Shieldred or a Fury is fine.
If you go down that road and they just left in their Terminates, your deck just doesn't have enough. Like, it's either, like, making your card draw engine unreliable and then putting you into more spots where you just run out of cards in the face of a Terminate, or they just, like, take Shieldred out of their deck for game 3. I guess it's not, like, too bad because you can get Fury, but...
Yeah, so I think we agree, like, Scam is great and it's good enough to be problematic. We haven't fully committed to, is this, like, Hogak, Valky territory? Is the sky truly falling in that regard? Some of the results do point that way. So when you get to the 16 out of 32 in a challenge territory, that is actually more than Valky ever did. I think Scam has reached that number one spot on that infamous leaderboard by this stage. But I think there is a larger factor here which makes that seem worse than it is. So there's this kind of weird information cascade when it comes to Magic Online results, where that in concert with just the availability of rental services means that it's very easy for people who just want to play a challenge to copy and paste a list that did well, and they play that, and then those lists in turn, like, enough of them are doing well enough in the hands of enough people that those in turn get copy-pasted and so on and so forth down the line. And weirdly, this is much more of a problem on either extremes of the formats on Modo. So in Standard, like, this is all that happens. And you are guaranteed to get a much more narrow picture of Standard than actually exists, because inevitably it condenses into the two or three decks that people like to play on Modo. So famously, the Hinata days where, you know, Kane had the challenge where they played against 8 Hinata mirrors in a row, this is just what Standard is on Magic Online. But the problem is, that's all that Standard is anywhere. Like, Arena has no useful information to go on, and Paper Standard does not exist still yet, but probably still won't exist. And so that's just Standard. I mean, there's no compartmentalizing it into Standard on Modo versus real Standard. This is real Standard. Sorry. And then at the other extreme, there's Vintage, which is equally suspect to the same principles, and it's made testing for Eternal Weekend, which I think is going to be the topic of one of our upcoming episodes. It's made that very difficult because the leagues are noise, as they so often are, but then the challenge is you get two of those a week. They're not at convenient time zones unless you're willing to really pull an all-nighter in the US. And so those challenges, still, those are like the only testing you really have, but those are equally suspect to the same thing of, yeah, the deck that did well last week, that just gets Xerox into oblivion, and now that deck is 30% of the format. So regardless of when you check in on Vintage, it will look more broken and lopsided than it is, because, well, this week it's 30% Oath, and last week it was 30% of the mogged blue-black lowest control deck, and before that it was 30% Coveted Jewel, and God knows what it will be next week. And that cycle will just repeat itself endlessly, where once you get to an actual Vintage tournament, if such a thing exists, the whole thing is more open than that. But then as you work in from those extremes, like, Legacy is weird because that factor exists, but also people just play whatever the hell they want. Like, people play the Legacy deck that they like. And so when Legacy has been in these, like, every other iteration periods of, yeah, Delver's just the best deck by a massive margin again, it looks more open than it is online because people aren't playing Delver, which in turn lets people succeed with whatever the hell their pet deck is. And then Pioneer, again, the thing I took to Twitter with today was, you know, you go back 5 months, people would post these screenshots of this prelim is 4 Rakdos midrange decks and 5 mono green decks, and we got to ban Karnon Fable so that we're not in this 2-deck era. And now, like, Rakdos still sucks, and mono green has completely vanished, and they didn't have to ban anything. Like, Karn banned itself. You don't see it anywhere anymore. But that is the same like narrowing and magnifying effect that just structurally is baked into how Magic Online operates these days. That is what it is. Modern is, I think, not inherently subject to that, but it's still there. And I think you see it here. That's why you see 16 out of 32 scam, as opposed to, I don't know what the true number is, if there even is one, but it's much more in the 5 to 7 out of 32 range, which is kind of what you saw with like Murktide for most of its existence, or Hammer at its peak. Like, that is usually what the best deck tends to get. This is just people have kind of given up on doing anything else and have accepted that, yeah, I will be the traffic. I will be the problem here. I will copy one of the 16 scam decks from the last challenge, and hopefully I will be one of the 16 scam decks in the top 32 of this challenge too. Like, that's just the world we live in now.
I want to point to something that disagrees with that comparison to Pioneer and Modern. When you look at the RC data repeatedly for Pioneer, you see a lot of 49.3% for Rakdos and Mono Green. When you look at the Pro Tour data for Scam, it's still the best deck. At the tournament where people were expecting it the most and trying to beat it the most, and the super teams didn't play it, Scam just put up best deck numbers. Like, I think that tells a very different story.
I agree. And the fact that the Pro Tour is the one time where the best in the game have had a reason to focus their lens on Modern, and that's what we got, that does speak volumes in a way that, the usual RC results and so on, there's still some noise baked in, but less than you see anywhere else. I do wonder if somehow this format remains the same going into the Modern RC cycle coming up early next year, if that paints the same picture where Scam is the most popular deck and still winning like 53-54% of its matches. I don't see how they justify not doing anything at that point. Like, you can say the format is healthy and diverse, but when there is this one clear winner at the top for so long and is getting this volume of complaints, and something has to shift, and other more innocent best decks have been framed for less is how I'd put that.
Yeah, I guess how long can you let this even... Well, okay, when is the next big Modern event, and can you let this go on until then?
Well, the next big Modern event is, I guess, exactly the US Modern RC, which it would be weird to ban in the middle of an RC cycle. So I think realistically, whatever window comes with Lost Caverns of Ixalan, which I think is early December, that might be where like the Modern RCQs have happened, the Modern RCs haven't happened yet. So if you want the format to look different for them, that's exactly when you have to do it. So I didn't place any actual money on this last time, but I think the smart money for the last cycle was on no changes. I don't know about this upcoming one. If you want to place any virtual itchy and scratchy bucks here, where would you expect things to land?
Well, let's just start talking about the next category of, if you cannot scam these bean decks, what does the format look like? Is unleashing the rest of the format just worse? Like, is Go Big Magic in that way still exploitable? And is playing the games where both players draw 47 cards fun? Let's actually just skip to the second part, because it's not. It just isn't. It just outright isn't. This is like a fundamental belief I have about Magic that has been like, I think that the games are more fun when at some point someone is at risk of running out of action. And also in a way where like it's unclear who that is, and based on like with the ring stuff, it's just very clear. One player is going to either have no cards, or both players are going to have all the cards. When both players have their deck in their hands, the game sucks. It is just bad. Like, every time you hear four color players talking about their mirrors, you start wishing that you were playing Living End mirrors instead. Like, you just, I would, at least the Living End mirrors, you have a valid complaint and it's weird. And you're like, that's cool. Like, the four color mirrors are just not fun. They're just and they've only gotten worse.
I would argue they sometimes can run out of actual stuff more than you might expect. So there have been a lot of times against, certainly in the days of like Yorion, Traverse, Renin Six, where they would have a hand of like seven cards going into the mid game, and you would just shove on whatever your one thing you had left was, and it would work somehow because, yeah, their hand was actually like three lands from Renin Six, a redundant Renin Six, the wrong interaction spell for this matchup, and like an abundant growth that they never had time to cast or something, and their decks were so full of air that actually their draw engines would just propel them to this point where they had all air and just no actual stuff. So that happens a decent amount, but yeah, you want them to be able to run out of physical cardboard in a way that seems increasingly impossible. And Scam, as I argued in my episode with Jarvis, this is like Scam is the one deck pushing back against that trend in any meaningful way, where you might not like how it does it and it has to resort to drastic lengths in order to do that. But I think it's pretty clear that in a world of the One Ring and Beanstalk, and you could even lump in stuff like Fable, which feels weirdly small ball once those cards enter the discussion, the classic formula of Thoughtseize into Tarmogoyf, like that's not going to do it. You have to go nuclear with Grief Scam and Voidwalker and Blood Moon to compete. So maybe Scam is a symptom of a larger problem too, where I would like the deck on that poll to be a kind of a classic John Saga style deck, as opposed to, well, if it has to be Scam, then it suggests that something really wrong is happening on the other extreme as well.
Yeah, I entirely agree with that. And I think that the four color engines, like you talked about that situation with Ren and like Abundant Growth, I think these engines are just fundamentally different, just the way they put cards in their hand. Also, I think that a little bit of deck exhaustion is an interesting mechanic. A lot of deck exhaustion where like, oh, I have to beat every Solitude in their entire deck, I think that that's not the best thing. Like, I don't know. It's just better when not every deck in the format has to kill your opponent on turn three or beat every card in your opponent's deck. It's just better.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's a pretty uncontroversial take there. So is the worry that you get into a like Throne of Eldraine standard kind of situation where you remove the most obvious offender, but that was the only thing that was smothering the next most obvious offender, and just down the line until, you know, we've banned four things and now suddenly like we're talking about banning Primeval Titan or Urza Saga or just some other thing which isn't even on the radar yet but will be at some point once you take the most layers off?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can move to the next question of like, okay, so let's talk about Beans, but like, are people done with Cascade too? I think that people are just kind of done with Cascade in this context of like the Beans Cascade stuff not really being something you can point the normal anti-Cascade stuff against. Like, I don't know. We lived through, I guess it was even pre-MH2, like we had the Cascade decks starting to pop up in like Living Anon. And like, I don't know, you just point the obvious cards at them, like the equation's pretty interesting and pretty simple, and like the number, like, it's not like the Cascade decks of that era were, I don't know, maybe we'll discover that like they did get better in some way, but I don't really feel it. Like, it's just kind of like the same cap of like all your cards have to cost three, so you're kind of clunky. You've got this big effect, but it can be stopped by a singular thing. Like, I don't know. Just, like, I don't think you really have to peel that far back to get to a modern that is just, like, functionally magic. I think that the question is whether you ban Grief and then watch everyone, like, wallow in misery and then, like, ban the One Ring and hope that, like, Beans is kept in place by the fact that the big mana decks take over like they used to against four color, and then you have this equilibrium where the big mana decks are like also not like weird mid-range decks and are therefore exploitable. Like, maybe that's the way you have to go about it. I don't know, maybe you just like feel you're obligated to never ban the One Ring because it's the One Ring and Post Malone would be mad. I don't really know what you're doing there.
Yeah, I think I circle around to the same thing I had with Jarvis, honestly, of you kind of have to hit something from both. I think Fury and Solitude make the most sense in terms of you cut both down to size. Fury maybe doubles down on some of what Four Color is trying to do as well, and then the overlap of stuff that is kept out by those powerful effects at the same time. I take your point that if it's not Fury, it's probably going to be something else, but at least let people rediscover that for themselves in a way that just seems so obviously impossible at the moment. And then you have the whole tranche of cards, which, yeah, they're probably still bad, but they're certainly bad in the face of Solitude in a way that the four color decks won't let you forget. Maybe you can justify that to yourself. Like, again, let people have their fun, even if that fun might be short-lived, I think. And then if there's some second order effect down the line to where that's problematic, and, you know, if there's no free interaction, then maybe Hammer or Amulet or something becomes too good, we'll deal with that when we get to it. But that seems like the most natural first step to me that isn't I think it does the job without being this massive overreaction where, you know, we ban three other cards just to be safe, the way that they did with like Ballista and Kethis and Pioneer at the same time.
Okay, so I guess that solves some of the problem there. And maybe the One Ring is more reasonable if it is, like, mana constrained and you can die a little more easily after it's cast by just, like, your opponent having remands effectively as opposed to, like, having to actually kill you on the spot with lightning bolts. I guess I do have a follow-up question is, like, why are you drawing the line at Solitude instead of Force of Negation or Force of Vigor?
I mean, those are horseshit, too. Force of Vigor, especially, like, that just is a joke of a magic card. You can argue those are, like, useful fail-safes which are more targeted in the sense of, like, the buyout of I get to 5 mana and I cast my Fury, even though you had nothing meaningful to kill left, like, okay, it's still a good win condition. Or Solitude is, it's not an ideal proactive card, but you watch people streaming 4-color and they get paired against Ad Nauseam or something and they're just becoming the weirdest beatdown deck of all time with their Solitude. It's like, those cards can do that fundamentally in a way that Force of Negation and Force of Vigor can't. It's easier to strand those to the point where they just have literally nothing to do. And I would not mind turning back the clock to a world where Modern did not have those free cards in it, but that ship sailed with MH1 4.5 years ago. I don't think you can really put the ship or the genie or both back in the bottle at this point. So I think banning the worst offenders and then letting the other ones just figure out their place makes some amount of sense. And I'm going to grumble under my breath when I lose to Force of Vigor, but that's fine. Maybe I am someone who deserves to lose in that way, whereas everyone getting squashed under the might of Fury and Solitude is not.
Yeah, I was just asking because that is also where I drew the line. It was like I would be fine with Negation and Vigor existing, but like if you're banning free cards, Solitude is the clear turning point. I didn't know, like, that was kind of a I know it when I see it kind of reaction, and not really like a I have a clear argument as to why Solitude is the line and the other ones aren't.
I mean, while we're on the subject, Force of Vigor is just an absolute nonsense card to print. I don't want that fact to go overlooked. And it's always good to give people a reminder of that. But what are we going to do about it? Are we just going to ban Force of Vigor out of the blue, even though it's only people like me, the X-deck here, perverts of the world, complaining about it?
No, I do want to say, I think that I wonder in a non-Solitude world what the state of Urza Saga looks like, but that might be a more solvable problem, and it might be nice to go back to a world where, like, Prismatic Ending and Leyline Binding as the best removal spells actually have a problem that you need to solve with something else.
So, but bring Spreading Seas back again? Yeah, there are more, like, bespoke answers there, I think. You know, Dress Down becomes good again in a whole new way. Like, I think the format can and will adjust to Saga decks if those become an issue, or I guess the card Saga in particular. But I see that as a bridge we cross when we get there, whereas in terms of addressing immediate complaints, I think these are the obvious ways to do it. The Beans decks, they're still this enigma to me where I'm not convinced that Cascade Beans is actually better than just regular 4-color in some form. I think it does introduce specific, like, structural issues with the decks where there was always this issue with 4-color of you could get them to the point where they had to burn their pitch cards early just to keep up, and then once they had their card advantage engine, it would only get back to parity instead of doing anything else. And that issue is even more acute with these Beans decks, I think, where a lot of them, they have a big problem with just uncontested Ragavan or even contesting the Ragavan if they have to pitch card something to do it. And once you lock yourself into the Cascade restriction, like, the pattern of one for running with Prismatic Ending or Lightning Bolt or something is off the table. So you can play Dead Gone and stuff, but then you're really stretching the limits of why we're doing this in the first place. And the same goes for really other threats that can sneak under that stuff as well. And then you have this additional vulnerability to, you know, the Beanstalks are cutting Teferi because they think that it's bad on the whole. But if, like, the mirror is becoming increasingly reliant on Cascade, then Teferi is just still very good there, while also, you know, Living End is having a resurgence, so you kind of want your Teferis there, and it's still just generically a very good card. Like, I think that the Cascade Beanstalks are almost easier to exploit in a way than a generic 4-color is, and that's before you get into, well, yeah, if 4-color now is the deck to beat, you're going to see a lot more Tron, Coffers, Valakut, Amulet, which all demand, like, different solutions in their own ways, even though they are all nominally big mana decks. And then maybe Creativity is good in, like, the 4-color soup pseudo mirror again. So I think that that threat is easier to squish in a way than the scam threat is by design. But I don't want to live in that world either, where we just turn back the clock 3 months. I'd rather change some of the fundamentals and see what goes from there.
This is somewhat related to your Discord posts about just like 3 Lavinia main deck hammer or whatever, correct?
Yeah, like I would not play hammer right now. You couldn't pay me to do that. But if you paid me enough, I guess I would just main deck a giant pile of Lavinias, because that card is great, and that's almost... I would be playing hammer to get to play main deck Lavinias, as opposed to playing Lavinias to shore up a hole in my hammer deck. And if maybe there's some like weirdo build of humans with a bunch of exploits like that, I don't know. But you could talk me into something in that space, maybe. Or you could pay me into something in that space. Talk would not be enough. Put your money where your mouth is.
I don't know. Money is free speech, at least on this side of the border. So
that's true. But yeah, I think that if we're in a world where you can take your favorite modern deck and change 4 or 5 cards and you are meaningfully better against the big menace, that's just always where modern has been for over a decade. And if that's where we're at, then fine. I think maybe we're closer to that with 4-color than we are with Scam. But again, I would rather be there with, I don't know, Murktide again or Hammer or really anything else at this stage.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that you mentioned Murktide, because that is a deck that is like not a free spell deck, except for in extreme cases where it's like, I would like a little bit of subtlety this weekend, or like a little bit of fury. And I think that one of the things that like secretly happened with MH2 and the sets following it that was lost in the shuffle of just printing more free cards is that the one mana answers caught up to free cards.
Yeah, I mean, Murktide doesn't really need to be a free spell deck, because it just has a ton of broken cards that cost one mana, which is as much of a trend and a constraint as anything else. And yeah, we long for the days where people just paid for mana for spells, and maybe that's where the golem's paw curled, and we got the One Ring as, well, hey, you wanted a card that you had to pay for mana for. Although maybe the response there is, yeah, and that one crowds out every other 4-mana card now, to the point where why are we building an Urza deck where if we just took our Urza deck and put the One Ring over the Urzas, it probably would be a better deck. I don't know how you answer that question. So maybe that card is part of the problem too. But yeah, Murktide, I think that you could print any of Dragon's Rage Channeler, Ragavan, Unholy Heat, and it would be okay in context. But to go back to conversations we had over 2 years ago, printing all of them at once in conjunction with everything else was a little short-sighted, I think.
Potentially, I think that, again, going back to the differences between that and Scam, they are jarring, but you can work around them in ways that you just can't with Scam, because they just fundamentally operate in the game mechanics and Scam operates outside of them.
Yeah, there is a difference between you are outmatched on efficiency versus you don't get to keep or cast any of your cards. Those are just different experiences, fundamentally.
Yeah. So, I think that about wraps up the discussion of the problems of Modern. Are there any good things you want to highlight about this era, or is it just so dominated by this discussion that it's really hard to point stuff out?
Well, I mean, Amulet's still the best deck and no one's talking about it, so that's always a good sign. But no, I still enjoy playing Modern tournaments for the most part, and it's rare that that's not the case, but I have not found myself pushed away the same way that a lot of other people have been, but I sympathize with those people. I'm not going to say they're wrong. And I do think that at some point, the response of, well, actually, Scam is only winning 52% of its matches instead of 54%. To me, that's much less convincing than, the accumulation of hundreds of people complaining about the exact same things, which you just look at the cards on paper, it makes sense for them to complain about. Like, when people are annoyed at getting Grease Scanned on turn one, you can tell them to get over it, but like, no, there is a lot to get over there. Like, they're not just complaining apropos of nothing the way that people do love to do. There are a lot of complaints which I think are just skill issues, or you don't understand how the cards work, or, I mean, like, to use an easy example, like, people complain about, like, Oracle of the Alpha in Historic or something, and it's like, well, no, that card is cool as hell and also really bad, so if you're losing to it, just get over yourself. That's not the case here. Like, there is a problem that has to be dealt with in some capacity.
Yeah, well, what about the problem of Ensoul Artifact and Boom Bust in the same deck?
Is that a problem, or is that a glorious, glorious something?
Yeah, this is, I guess, to loop back around to results, but also just right into nonsense. I think this was the one highlight of the week, and probably it's just, this falls under the rare example of decks where you see the One Ring and you're like, hell yeah. And this is Nassif top-8ed a modern qualifier with Is It Scissors? Just like Raghavan and Soul Artifact, Rise Shine, but then also like hybridizing that with the weirdo pauper indestructible land nonsense like Boom Bust and Cleansing Wildfire to go with all the artifact lands in modern. And I don't, like, I am glad to have looked at this deck. I don't know if you could even pay me to play it, but I'm glad to look at it.
Well, so it makes sense that, hey, if you're using Cleansing Wildfire to ramp with your artifact lands, you kind of want a good 4-drop to ramp into, and I'm not sure which other ones are really on the table even. Maybe it is Urza in your artifact land deck, but that one gets shoved aside because the One Ring is here. And then, we want more indestructible artifacts to enchant within Soul Artifact, and you do the Scryfall Surge, and then you get some bridges, you get like Darksteel Relic or something, and then you scroll down and the One Ring shows up, and it's like, oh, Well, sure, why not? That's an additional upside. So I guess it is a on-theme card, if that ever really makes sense to say about the One Ring.
Yeah, I am, like, slightly sad that we didn't also make this a Flagstones deck, but whatever.
It's kind of hard to support, like, Flagstones and Artifact Lands and just have a functional mana base outside of that, I think.
Probably, but that doesn't mean I'm not sad about it.
No, of course. I mean, there are the... There were, like, Boros decks doing that back in the day with, you know, those were ramping towards Fury and Solitude and lots of other cards, which hopefully will not be legal 3 months from now.
Yeah, I do appreciate this Storm's Wrath in the sideboard. That might be my favorite piece of it. I don't really know why, but it's there. I'm glad to remind myself that somehow that card existed in, like, the same set as Underworld Breach and Uro.
Yeah, I think there the mystery is the charm. Like, I don't know why it's there, and I don't want to know, because then it would just be boring.
Well, you know, you can't kill a scammed fury with 3 damage. It's got to be 4. And clearly Storm's Wrath is going to hit in time.
I guess if you install your bridge or something, that one just blocks the fury indefinitely. We don't even need to Storm's Wrath at that point.
Yeah, and it only does 4 damage to your 5 power creatures.
Yeah, we figured it out. More deck building genius from Hall of Famer, Gabe Nassif, once again here.
Yeah, also Brotherhood's End in the sideboard of our artifact deck because all of our artifacts are indestructible.
Oh, hell yeah. That's you just love to see that.
Yeah. yeah, this deck's a little bit of sunshine, but, you know, you said, you know, like, oh, I'm enjoying playing Modern, and, like, I enjoy playing Scam in Modern. That's kind of where I'm at. I will keep playing Scam in Modern when I'm not playing Vintage and Legacy Leagues.
Yeah, so there is, even in the darkest days, there was always a glimmer of hope, as Nassif is kind enough to offer us. On that note, we will let people get out of here until we touch on equally nonsensical formats next week. So until then, you can find us on Twitter at Dom and Javier at ARMLX. You can find the podcast on Twitter at Dominaria_pod. You can find us on Patreon, as Ray did this week, our new patron. So we give our thanks to him and to any of you who are considering taking that same plunge yourself. You can find us there at patreon.com/Dominaria_judgment. And you can find us talking about all manner of nonsense across all formats over in the Discord. So link to all of that in the show notes. I will also be releasing a bonus episode giving a tournament report from KubeCon, much overdue this week, and also just a larger philosophical digression over the ins and outs of designing cubes, playing cubes, just the concept of cube and its relationship with Magic. So if that is up your alley, you can find that probably going up about the same time as this episode is. A nice compliment as well to our episode last week about competitive money drafting for Vintage Cube with Alpha Frog. So two very different ends of that spectrum. So lots more coming down the pipeline, but that will have to wait. And until then, take care, everyone.